Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen live on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as topic suggestions for future programs. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, one of the founding members of UBU. Tonight's topic is, if it takes a village to raise a child, what does it take to raise the group? Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis, and as always, it's good to be back with the family, and as I say almost every time, it seems that this third Thursday rolls around so fast, but it's a pleasure to be with the family and to be with you as well.
Thank you. It's always great to have you with us, and so let's get right to it. Where would you like to begin tonight's discussion?
Well, the theme or the topic for this evening, I want to keep uppermost in our minds, our hearts, and our spirits, that question, mm-hmm. If it takes a village to raise a child, then what does it take to raise the village? And we want to have a discussion around that question this evening. And Stuart Fields out of North Carolina is going to be joining us as well. He's probably on the line now. But as always, we want to use these third Thursdays to kind of give us an update and reminders. First of all, for members, this coming Sunday is a members-only call. We have a members-only call once a month. And if you have not already gotten the notice, just stay tuned to your inbox and you'll receive the notice. This is a Zoom call. It will be live. We'll record it, mm-hmm. and we'll get the meeting back out to members afterwards. So that's one of the announcements. Again, this coming Sunday at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time is our monthly members-only call. You'll also be getting a notice, if you haven't already gotten, this is for members, that our annual meeting in March is fast approaching. That's less than a month, the 10th, mm-hmm. 11th, and 12th of March. So look for that notice as well. The other announcement is that in Atlanta, the Atlanta members are involved in a fairly involved process of creating local UBU chapters in Atlanta. We talked about chapters for a long time, but we really hadn't formatted the guidelines and other tools to actually do it. We were essentially nationally based with mm-hmm. the work primarily coming out of our central unit, but we're going to use a distributed management structure, a leadership structure, at least on the ground, and we call these UBCs, UBU-based communities. So for members, be on the lookout for notices to join our calls, our Zoom calls. If you have not received them and you want to receive them in the future so that you are aware, just let us know. We have a 4 o'clock p.m. Sunday boot camp for UBCs. That's for establishing UBU communities on the ground and starting here in Atlanta. So that would be the announcements, I want to welcome Stuart if he's on the line, and if you would open his mic so we can talk to him.
Yes, he should be able to be heard now.
Hey, bro.
Hello, whole family. How y'all doing?
Hey, good. Now, you in the backwoods, you up in Ahoskie, North Carolina, is that right?
Yes, sir. We're in a little small town on eastern North Carolina, close to the Virginia border. But it's a lot of history where I'm at. It's a lot of history as far as Freedom Fighters that been through this area that a lot of people are unaware of. But Rosa Parks, a lot of people don't know that. She taught at Elizabeth City College. Nat Turner, where he had his rebellion in Virginia, it's like no more than 20, 30 minutes from Ahoskie.
Okay.
You had a lot of Marcus Garvey had some UNIA divisions in Pequimis County. That's Little Edenton. So it's a lot of stuff that's been going on in this area that people don't know about. It was a slave revolt in Tarboro in the 1800s. One of the first ones in North Carolina, but it was spoiled like always. Someone wanted to old master. But Princeville is the oldest town in North Carolina, and it was founded by slaves.
Okay.
And so it's a lot of history in this little area that we know about that the world may not.
Exactly. And family, just remember that the East Coast, I know one of our most active memberships in the past has been in the Tidewater area of Virginia. Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Hampton, in that area, and maybe even north of that, but along the coast, all the way from at least that part of Virginia, all the way back down to back down below what's the city in Florida? That's one of the Jacksonville, but below Jacksonville, so. Just in the coming future, we're going to talk more about those coastal areas. And, of course, we talk about the Black Belt South. But there's some rich history along that coast, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, back down to St. Augustine. So, you've recently over some span of time been running off to East Africa as well. Let us know a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. I was privileged by a professor to ask him that I ever wanted to go to Ghana. And so I went with him. The year of return was 2019, I think, was the year of return. And I didn't make it that year, but I went 2020, that January of the next year. I had the privilege of going over there. And it was a life-changing event to be able to go there and see Africa firsthand, especially compared to the way we have an idea of what we think Africa looks like and the image that we get here in America. So when I actually went there and saw that, it's nothing like I thought. I was really surprised, motivated, and also it gave me hope. So from that first trip, I have been over 10 times. I stopped counting once I got to 10. I don't even count no more. But in my traveling from there to here, I've been able to meet some wonderful people over there, make some business connections. And, see some of the problems that is there and see how we can help there on the continent and also how some of the stuff that they have there we really need here in America as far as business-wise. So I got some business connections. I actually went up north to, when a lot of people know about Ghana, they're familiar with the southern part of Ghana, with Cape Coast and El Nino, because this is where the slave dungeons was at. But I learned that majority of the slaves came from up north. They was marched down from up north to the southern sector. So I had the privilege of going up north in Ghana to Boga Tonga and Pikawar and Sandaman. These are areas that's northern Ghana, where the slaves or the slave camps were, and was able to learn some of that history and see how a group of us. It's a group of us that go, how we can actually start helping or, you know, trying to do our part to help them in them areas, because the northern part of Ghana is not as modernized as the southern part.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's more of a traditional villages there. So you get
right.
to really experience Africa, but you also learn the culture. And, like, we didn't know that the northerners used to march 3 months from up north to do trade down south. They will walk the animals down south, and this is how, you know, it's a lot. I don't want to, because I talk about it for
right.
days. Like, it's a lot that you learn, that I've learned. Since I've been going, I will say
good.
That.
But I know you talked to me a little bit about you and your comrades putting in wells in
yes,
rural communities as well.
Yes, we started putting water wells. Actually, up north, the first one was Peekawar Slave Camp. This is one of the slave camps that's up north in Upper East Ghana. And we went there, and we found out that the people that was in the village had to walk 2 to 5 miles to get water. So we were getting a tour of the slave camp, but where the slave camp at is villages around it. So some of these people still stay there, and they have remembrance of what's going on. And from what happened, so we put the first water well there. This was in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a second part to the slave camp, so we put another water well on the second part of it because they were saying how far the other people have to walk. So now we don't put three, so we're working on our fourth one in the school. So, like, we've been putting water wells in that area. And actually, we actually in the process now of helping them get a school in that area. And just for your information, they are giving land away up there.
Okay.
In northern Ghana, they're giving land away. That's just for your information. Like, you
right.
go through the chiefs,
right.
they're giving that land away.
I got you. Well, now you have an African name. We call you Stuart, but you have another name as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, in the Akan, depending on what day of the week you're born, you have a name.
Okay.
So I'm Sunday born. So by me being Sunday born, my name would be Kwesi.
Kwesi.
Because I'm Sunday born. Yeah. I don't know all each day of the week. I think Kwame is Saturday.
Okay.
Yah is Thursday. Depending on what day of the week in the Akan tradition. But not only the Akan, I found out that even in Frafra, that's where they speak up north, according to the day of the week, they have names also.
Okay.
So it's kind of similar. But depending on what day of the week that you're born, you have a name according to that day of the week.
So we're going to call you Stuart or Kwesi?
Well, I mean, you can call me Kwesi because that's what they call me when I'm in Africa.
Good. Well, I want to just let the family know you've been an Ulu member for a long time. And we're going to have you join us on most of these third Thursdays because when we talk about the theme for this evening, it's really going to be the theme for each third Thursday. And it's really what we are building around, this notion of what it takes to raise the village. And so, in essence, Ulu it will be, or currently is, involved in establishing villages in cities and rural areas and towns. In the U.S. and eventually in other places as well. As I mentioned earlier, we call them UBCs, Ulu-based communities. But the essence is the village. Now, Brother Thurman, he didn't know it, but he chose a precious image for our flyer promoting the question, if it takes a village to raise a child, then what does it take to raise the village? And it's an image of two children playing with each other. but looking each other in the eye in such a powerful way, loving way, trusting way, affirming way. And in my spirit, when I looked at that image, and I encourage all of you who received the email to look at the image, that image for me represents love, trust, assurance that could only come from those children being in a secure village. The stare on their face indicates that they don't have a worry in the world. They know that their village has them, you know, that their village prioritizes their safety, their welfare, their growth, their stability, and all the other adjectives that we could come up with. But what I want to do is, Kwesi, get you, myself, Sister Q, and other people who will join us in a discussion about what it takes to raise the village. It's a profound question, and I'm suggesting that the answer is being built by Ulu. It's understood, appreciated. Much of the structures, much of the engineering, much of the ingredients of what it takes to be a village of African people in the 21st century is very much underway in terms of it being constructed. So I want to invite our brothers and sisters in the listening audience to be prepared to come on with questions, or feedback, comments, whatever. And I generally go down this road in terms of impressing upon us how important it is that we fight. Yes, we must fight against intrusion culturally, spiritually, physically, that we also heal, that we take time out to look at our health, address our health mentally, physically, spiritually, in other ways. But ultimately, some of us have got to be clear about what it means to build. So we want to fight, we want to heal, but we must build. My position is that we have the ability, but in addition to the ability, we have the responsibility to build beyond challenges. In other words, our appeal should be to ourselves to build so that we're able to be successful in the geopolitical, economic, whatever name we put on it, in those environments. So, Brother Stewart, or Brother Kwesi, rather, it's going to take a little bit for me to switch over and use Kwesi. Now, you're a little younger than Q and myself. I'm right at 80. Sister Q is probably in her 30s or 40s. I'm messing with you, Q.
Okay.
But she's closer to my age than she'll probably admit. But it may be that I have a particular language, and it may be a barrier to folk getting what I'm saying. But when Billie Holiday says, "God bless the child that's got his own," I know that we feel that. In our spirit, we know that. And structurally, we're going to have to build from that essence. So, Brother Stewart, as a relatively young brother, coming from a rural area, primarily a rural area, but I'm sure you've had experience in the cities, and, of course, your trips back and forth. And you've heard us a little bit on our boot camps on Sundays talk about the essential ingredients of what we call New Ujamaa. Well, let me back up a minute and then just say this, and then we'll get to discussion. Julius Nyerere, the revolutionary leader of the Tanzanian people at independence, talked about Ujamaa, which is the fourth principle of the Nguza Saba, celebrated on the fourth day of Kwanzaa, generally defined as cooperative economics. And what we've done, we've added the word new hyphen to it, so New Ujamaa, as 21st century Ujamaa. In other words, the principles espoused by Nyerere and the party at that time, expressed in the 21st century. So Ujamaa, or what we call family-centered economics, as opposed to individually-centered economics. Now, I just remind us that, in general, we have these poles of opposites, but it seems that they move in and out of the other. But in terms of white supremacy, it doesn't matter whether it's capitalism or socialism. The common thread under the leadership of white supremacy in those forces, in leadership of that, you know, it doesn't matter vis-a-vis African people. Both of them are against us. But you have capitalism, which is individually focused, and socialism, which is state-focused, and then New Ujamaa, which is family-focused. I'm suggesting that we have the opportunity to grow a new economic phenomenon, paradigm, on the planet that's not only good for Africans, but good for humanity. So I just wanted to say that, and I want to invite you, Brother Kwesi, to say a few words relative to how you see us building Ulu-based communities or Ulu collectives or Ulu villages in cities and towns and, you know, around this country and around the world, and having them connected, but primarily these being economic facilitators. Any thoughts?
Yeah, when I first heard the concept of Ulu, I told you that it was like Bitcoin. I knew it was the future. And when I look at the UBCs, the new way we have it scheduled, and I was coming out, I'm going to say family-centered economics instead of UBCs. I just say that.
Mm-hmm.
I compare that to the Mexicans and our communities. When the Mexicans move into our neighborhoods, a lot of times they stay in the same house, maybe eight of them. They all work, right? But they all pool their money together, and they may pay their bills together. They take one day, they shop, and then they send that money to Mexico to help their family. But they work as a collective, as African-Americans or blacks or however you want to call us, FBAs. The concept of family-centered economics is gone. We don't work together at all. We actually work against each other. Prime example is I can give is somebody that parents die and they leave the land to the children or leave property to children. what happens 9 out of 10 times? The children can't work together to secure the property. Usually it's one person want to be in charge, but it's no togetherness. The concept of you and me is a village is gone. So when I hear ULU or family-centered economics, this has to be the future, because in the machine that we are fighting, no matter what, they work together at the end of the day. They may be separate behind closed doors, but they have a united front. We don't have a united front. And we have to come up with a way to not only get our dollars together and circulate them amongst each other and build economic bases, but we have to teach people the understanding of it and I guess the usefulness of it, so we can leave something for our children and our children's children. Because we can look in all our – and the Mexicans are good examples. You can look at them in your community, how they come up, and then within a year or two, they got their own Mexican restaurant. And they all go and eat at that restaurant. They all go there. You will see them. They all go in there eating at that restaurant because they understand that they have to pull their money together because they're trying to pull each other up. And they understand if one of us come up, all of us come up. We're totally different over here. We have the concept of it's me, and, you know, we have to break that cycle. And I feel like family center economics, ULU, UBCs is path forward. This is the only way that we will be able to dictate what happens with our dollar and see our dollars in real time. A lot of people talk about how, you know, how we got all this money, the total amount of spending power we have, like we the 7th or the 8th richest country if we put all our money, but it's not aggregated. We don't spend our money together. And I feel like ULU gives us the opportunity to do that. And also, it's something else when I can shop with myself. This is the most important thing about it with me, is that when you are part of ULU or UBC, you have pride now. Because now you ain't shopping with someone else. You're shopping with yourself. Your children say, I'm going to shop at our store. We're shopping at my store. That type of tone is different, and it's a different feeling. It'll make you feel proud about what you're doing. And a lot of our communities, people don't have no pride. So knowing that you are owners of something collectively, like, it's a no-brainer with me.
I say. Any thoughts, Sister Q?
Baba, we have a hand up, so
okay.
I'm going to let that person speak.
Good.
And get the mic. Come on. Okay. Caller with the last 4 digits 7204. Please state your name, where you're calling from. Make your comment or ask.
Yes. Good evening. This is Deborah from Richmond, Virginia. How are y'all this evening?
We're doing great. Anytime we can hear your voice. Yeah.
I just want to say I agree with him 100%. And one of the problems that we're having, we have more black businesses now than we ever have had before, but they're not buying from each other. You know, they say you have a shop, they're buying their sugar still from other people. You understand what I'm saying? Where we got plenty of black farmers out here now. You understand? And we're not buying from each other. And another thing that we really need to talk about is too many things out here. Well, not too many things. But anyway, it's too many things that are dividing us. And we need to really get into that, because that's a big problem. A big problem.
Okay.
If I don't, you know, if I don't go to church, you don't like me. That's like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or if I go to the wrong church.
Exactly.
I don't go to the church you go to. Right.
Exactly. Weird. I mean, weird. We need to stop that. Seriously, that's the problem. thank y'all for being on and talking about this, okay?
Baba Hakima, what Brother Kwesi was saying about the Mexicans, I remember when I was in New York. In New York, they have what they call bodegas. And you would see them, you know, like in the economic idea in the U.S. is you don't put your store next to a similar store. And you would see these stores like every corner. There's one of these bodegas, Spanish-speaking people. And a lot of times their prices would be lower than the supermarkets. And I couldn't figure out how is it that this little store here can charge less for eggs than the big supermarket or charge less for whatever you want. And what I found out is that they have a cooperative, and they all are under the umbrella of this cooperative, and they buy as a group eggs. So now they're buying more eggs than the supermarket, you know, like whatever your main brand supermarket is. They're buying more eggs than them. So that's how they are able to lower their prices. Then you could recognize them because they all had basically the same color scheme in their awnings and their store design or whatever. So they had their own contract with the people who are going to do the outside of the store. And I thought that was, you know, something that in generally we don't think about, you know, all of the black-owned supermarkets having the same kind of storefront because we all get it done from the same place. Or that we go as a collective and buy the things that we sell in our stores so that we can lower the price to our community. So I think when I Ulu model, the Ulu-based community is, to me, a way of doing that same kind of thing.
Exactly.
That ultimately everything that we get, everything that we need for our stores, we will control the path of whatever it is we're selling. So that's one of the reasons I am pleased to be part of Ulu. That's what one of the things that attracted me to Ulu.
Ashe. And of course, it's one thing to think that we should act similarly to what we're describing and hope for mm-hmm. us to perform that way, but it's altogether a different thing when you, in fact, have developed the technology and you're going to implant it in the community where some
sure.
people don't even know that you're implanting it into the community, and maybe implanting is not a good term, but we're going to grow that kind of thinking with engineering expertise in terms of building it out and and initially in small ways, but eventually in larger ways and connected one to the other as both of you have described.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other calls?
We have another hand. Yes, we do have another hand up.
Can I say something real fast?
Yeah, please. Jump in anytime.
The young lady who just called in, she said that, you know, I wanted to add something that she said. Someone said that the things that was used to help us when we was in a dead state, them things now are being used to tear us apart. And when I say what I mean, it's like when we was in slavery, we were such in a low state of mind that some of the things or ideologies that was brought to us was meant to bring us out of that low state of mind. So you have, like, these different doctrines. I'm not going to get into all of them, but they were brought to bring us from that low space that we was at that time. But now that we have moved on, them same things that was used to help us is now being used to hinder us, to hurt us. Because now instead of us coming under one banner, everybody is in that one side of that. They in their lane, and they fighting so hard for whatever it was to help save them that they can't see the bigger picture. And that's why we're so divided, because everybody is stuck gung-ho on whatever it is instead of looking at the bigger picture. I just wanted to add that.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay, caller with the last four digits, 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling from. Make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yeah, greetings. This is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida, USA.
All right.
How you be? Always good to hear Brother Quasi. I haven't heard him for a while. He's been traveling over to the motherland. That's good. Hey, brother. But look, I want while you're there, I wanted to ask you particularly because, you know, what Baba Hakeem has said is so important, the development and building of this village, all right, to provide security and the kind of atmosphere that our youth, our children can blossom in. Did you, you know, as you was there, particularly moving in northern Ghana in particular, any role that you saw of people interacting that you felt could be very helpful as we developed the UBCs? In other words, some of the things that you saw Africans doing, you know, to sustain themselves, to work with you to build the wells and what have you, you know, and traveling to sell stuff and stuff like that. Any characteristics that you saw that could definitely be helpful as we develop the kind of first to develop the UBCs in the Atlanta area and then, you know, elsewhere, probably up where you are in North Carolina?
Actually, how you doing, Shabaka? Well, yeah, it's a lot of things. But to be honest, I think it's taught to them from birth. Because when you pay attention, like, they still go through a chain of command. And when I say that, it's like they have elder brothers, junior brothers, and senior brothers, right? So, like, as things go on, the senior brothers have the final say. Then you have the junior brothers. The juniors or the young kids are the enforcement. They enforce the law. So, like, let me give you a good example. Like, let's say somebody steals something in the village, right? Well, the juniors are the younger kids. They are the ones that enforce the law. The elders and the seniors, you know, the seniors make the law, and the elders pass it down. The elders make the law. The seniors pass it down, but the juniors enforce it. So it's ingrained in them. It's really ingrained. And that's what I was so surprised about, is how they still have that chain of command. Like, you respect your elders over there, and if you don't, the younger generation are going to make you respect them, right? So, like, when it comes to them shopping and supporting one another, it's in them. It's like, I think with us, I don't know, we got to have that love for one another. It's hard. I'm going to be honest. I've been thinking about this hard. It's hard, but I guess we just got to find the right group of people that have the right mindset, that want to support one another and look at us as one big collective family, as one big village. But that's the main thing I would say, is I see that. I feel like they grown into that from birth. It's like with us, it's like we too separated over here.
Well, good. I really appreciate that answer. The implication of what you're saying seemed to suggest that we need to be in control of the institutions as we evolve, such that it becomes automatic as a young person, and then a young person who's senior to that young person, you know, may be responsible to instruct him or her, you know, to the rules of the game. But thank you for that answer. I appreciate that. Very good show you're having this evening.
Oh, Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Yeah, thank you for the question and thank you for the answer, Kwesi. And in Ulu, one of the structural things that's in our bylaws and guidelines is a Council of African Elders. We're going to use the Council of African Elders to deal with, first of all, ethics in our decision-making. There are times when it may be that we are not so clear in our ethical or value proposition, and the Council of African Elders will act as a security measure and make sure that we don't cross the lines in terms of values and ethics. But we also will grow to use these councils as mediators in time of need, guidance in terms of relationships, or to mediate conflicts. We have, over the years, been fairly successful in the utilization of Council of African Elders here in Atlanta. We've had, some very, very significant. I'll share one with you, and I think the community might be impressed. When Asa Hillier, one of our historians, passed, and I think he may have even passed while he was in Egypt or shortly thereafter, his family made a decision that there was to be no filming during the ceremonies for his transition. But one of the members of our community snuck in the balcony and filmed the proceedings against the family's will. And the brother had nerve enough to play the footage on a group outing. There was a bus trip from Atlanta to Gina, and there was footage being shown on the bus, and people saw that there was a violation. But the Council of African Elders interceded, and for a year, this is a person who was very active in the community, in fact had businesses in the community, but for a year he could not participate and essentially was banished for a year. But there have been other instances where the Council of African Elders interceded, but maybe I digress by talking so specifically about that issue. But there also is, in some circles in the community already, this notion of age-specific responsibilities. And so maybe, Shabaka, as we are building the guidelines for the UBCs, we may want to build into the guidelines some indication of age-specific responsibilities and duties, or at least point to those as well. But this whole thing of how do you raise the village, the most important thing, I think, in terms of that is to have the question in our mind. It's not how we we become a billionaire, or how we become, respected, or any number of things that we may have as a target or a goal, but focusing our attention on the elements, what it means to raise the village. I want to take us in another direction, unless there are other hands up.
No, not right now, Bob.
No? Okay. We mentioned it a little earlier in terms of the economic flow of capital throughout community. We call it buying power, spending power, whatever it's called. It's been estimated that more than $1 trillion a year flows through the hands of our people in America, just looking at America, I'm suggesting for those of you who are structural in your outlook, or mechanical, or have an engineering kind of thought pattern, the system that we are attempting to inlay, we think can be successful in harnessing and redirecting a minimum of 1% of the more than $1 trillion a year that flows through our fingers. In other words, the building of the Ulu-based communities, the building out of black-owned enterprises that do business in our community and do business in other communities, and just participate in the economy. But these are group-owned enterprises, and when they produce excess capital, it belongs to the community for further development. We feel that we can be successful with our model at a minimum of capturing 1% of the flow and placing that 1% in an environment where we grow our communities. 1% of $1 trillion is $10 billion. You hear me?
Okay.
1% of $1 trillion is $10 billion a year in terms of the flow. I'm suggesting that we can do that and more as we build out the system and extend it to being global. And so what we're talking about is at the base, in the initial stages of building a global economy that performs based on our self-interest, based on our growth patterns, based on the things that we need to do as African people. But you don't do it just wishing for it. You do it based on thinking through how to build the infrastructure, the machinery of what it is to be economically self-determined. Any thoughts additional, Brother Kwesi or Sister Q?
Yeah, with the what is to raise the village, you know, the first thing we got, and I said this to you before, Baba Akima, but we got to get off the milk of the white man. Like, that's the first thing. And I think we just have to do. It's time for us to, you know, in the 5% nation, or the nation of God and earth, there's something where they say you either build or you destroy. Build and destroy. Right? That's one of the lessons, is build and destroy. So either you build it or you destroy. It's one or the other. And I think that we just have to build. Let's do it, like with the business or the UBC models. Let's do it. And I feel like as long as, like, we don't need permission, we don't need acceptance, we don't need nobody to, you know, give us the green light, none of that. Let's just do it. Like, this is, you just do it. And I'm a big proponent on just getting things done. And, you know, and we just have to do it. And I think once we do it, everything else is going to fall into place. So we just got to just do it. It may sound simple, but in all honesty, that's what I believe. And also I believe that we have a good opportunity to, like, she was talking about the stores that don't buy things from black farmers, right? So, you know, the Nation of Islam, during COVID, right, it's a black farmer that's in Virginia, too. That's part of the Nation of Islam, got, like, one of the biggest farms. But during COVID time, the Nation of Islam wasn't able to get their Navy beans, right? Because, you know, production and stuff start going down. So what happened was this farmer that is part of the Nation of Islam, he started making the Navy beans. He started growing them. So now they have a black farmer. I can't think of his name, but his name is escaping me. But he is now, like, making their Navy beans. He's actually about to start getting, like, some of their produce. The thing with them is, like, black farmers is getting their products in stores. And, like, he's in the process of changing that. But what I'm saying is the COVID situation – made the Nation of Islam realize that they need to make their own Navy beans. And sure, so now, but it's going beyond that, where he have, like, different packages with Navy beans and, like, a different flavors of different types of vegetables that he's having frozen that is starting to be sold. So I'm just saying, like, what I'm saying is, like, just do it. Like, let's just do it. And I think that we got to get off the milk or breathe for ourselves, as some would say. Breathe the fresh air and just get this thing done. But I think we have opportunity really to, if we can't grow it here in America, we can use Africa. I think that we can and do some international trade to, like, get a lot of things done. That if we can grow it here, great. But if we can't, let's do international trade because it's wide open. It's just a matter of us sitting down and getting it done.
We're close to the end of the show. I do want to remind brothers and sisters who are in the listening audience, and if you're not already a member of ULU, go to our website, usliftingus.com, and become a member, or at least apply for membership. You don't become a member automatically. You have to be vetted, and there's a team of brothers and sisters who will reach out to you to make sure that you understand, you know, what ULU is all about. And again, I want to announce that for members, be present this Sunday for our members-only call and register for our upcoming convention in March, March 10th, 11th, and 12th. And already in place and moving is the process to develop local ULU chapters, or we'll call them villages, and build out the systems that allow us incrementally to gain greater and greater and greater control of the economics of our local community. And, of course, as we do that, then, as Brother, I'm trying to learn the name now.
You can say Stuart. It's okay.
As Brother Stuart talked about earlier, you know, once you have that economic base, then, you know, it begins to modify, change, enhance the culture. And the social aspects of community as well. And but the base, as we are often taught by our scholars, that the economics is the floor. Dr. Clark explains it a very unique way. He says economics is how you take care of your basic needs and your major wants. Politics is how you organize your economics, and culture is how you season the two. Economics, politics, and culture make up the social ecosystem. But if you don't have the floor, which is the economics, then you are dependent on somebody else to control the economic floor, and you can never be stable with someone who does not have your interest at heart controlling the economics. So, sis, take it away.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you, Brother Kwesi for sharing the information with us tonight. We look forward to having you come back on future Thursdays. Thank you to everyone that participated in tonight's conversation. And we want to thank everybody that joined, that's listening in on the phone or on your computer. We'd like to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, for another installment of Dare to Win. And remember, after a storm, we do not invite the storm to come back and help clean up. That's what this is all about. We're cleaning up and building for ourselves. And with that, I will say peace.
Peace.
Ashe.
The strong gets more, while the weak ones